I want you to picture something for a second. Maybe you're just standing on a beach.
Okay, I'm there.
And you see this sweeping, just absolutely undeniable wave forming out on the horizon. It's moving incredibly fast, it's towering, and you know, everyone around you is just frantically scrambling.
Right, like a massive structural shift.
Exactly. In the business world, this is that decade-defining shift. It's the AI revolution, or you know, cloud computing, or the digitization of every physical asset.
Yeah.
And the conventional wisdom, like the thing we are all taught from day one in business, is that if you can just paddle out and catch that wave, you're set. You ride it all the way to the bank.
Yeah. The assumption is always that identifying a sweeping macro trend is literally the exact same thing as securing a profitable future. It
Yeah.
feels intuitive, right? Like, I mean, if you are in a growing market, you must be growing your value.
Right. But what if that instinct is completely backwards? What if, instead of creating value, furiously paddling to catch that colossal wave actually destroys a company's worth?
Which is such a wild concept because it completely upends how most of us think about strategy. We assume growth is always inherently good, but growth can actually be this like machine that incinerates cash if the underlying structure of the business is flawed.
And that is exactly what we are tearing into today. So welcome to the deep dive. We got our hands on a really brilliant piece of investment analysis titled Building the Ark. And our mission today is
Yeah, it's a crucial reframing because it gets right to the fundamental nature of competition. What we're really unpacking here is why some companies have to fight tooth and nail for every single inch of progress, while others seem to just float upward effortlessly as the world changes around them.
So let's start by dismantling that biggest trap we just mentioned. The idea that seeing an enormous trend just automatically equals finding a profitable opportunity. To understand why this is a trap, we need to look at the philosophy of Bruce Greenwald.
Oh, yeah. He's often called the dean of deep value investing.
Right. And Greenwald has this core thesis that is just incredibly stark, and it serves as the whole foundation for this framework.
Yeah, his main argument is that growth only creates value when it happens strictly inside a franchise. And by franchise, he means a business that is protected by a sustainable competitive advantage, basically a barrier to entry, a moat.
So if the growth is not happening inside that protected moat, it's happening on what he calls a level playing field. And Greenwald's point is that growth on a level playing field creates absolutely nothing of lasting value.
Zero. Because, I mean, think about the mechanics of it. On a level playing field, there is literally nothing stopping your competitors from matching your every single move. Every dollar of investment you make to capture a new customer is immediately countered by a rival spending, you know, a dollar and 10 cents.
Right. You offer a new feature and they copy it in a month.
Exactly. So to keep winning, you have to lower your prices. To keep growing, you have to increase your marketing budget. And eventually, the prices compress, the margins just completely.
It just erode to zero.
Yeah, they erode to zero. And whatever economic value you thought you were creating just gets completely competed away in this brutal struggle just to survive.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because it sounds exactly like a gold rush to me. Finding gold, which is the wave, is basically meaningless if you have to spend every single ounce of gold you mine just paying for, like pickaxes and shovels and security guards.
Right, because everybody else is there too.
Yeah, you have to pay for all of that because you're mining on public land where anyone else can just set up camp right next to you and start digging in the exact same dirt.
That is the perfect analogy. I mean, the gold is there, but capturing it actually bankrupts you. And this brings us to the two critical questions that every investor, or really every business strategist, absolutely must ask. First, is there a wave?
Which is the easy part, right?
Right.
Everyone can see the AI wave right now. Everyone can see this shift toward passive investing. You don't need a PhD to spot a massive global trend.
No, not at all. But that's where like 90% of people stop their analysis. The second question is the hard one. Is that wave captured by a moat?
Right.
Understanding the wave just isn't enough. You have to understand the underlying structure of the competition. And the source we're analyzing has this incredibly powerful maxim that sums it up perfectly. It says, "A moat without a wave is like a wave without a moat."
They are both essentially useless in isolation. A fortress in a desert does you no good at all, and a tsunami hitting a totally unprotected beach just washes everything away.
Exactly. The wave exists in both scenarios, right? On the public land and inside the fortress. But the financial outcome is night and day, depending on where you're standing. If you are fighting on that level playing field, constantly having to invest just to keep your head above water, You are what the framework calls the mechanical player.
Mechanical player. And the player standing inside the fortress.
They are the free surfer.
The free surfer. Okay, let's bring this into the physical financial reality of what competing without a moat actually looks like. The framework uses a really striking metaphor here, comparing building an ark versus standing on a mountain. Let's start with the ark. If you are that mechanical company, you see the sweeping wave coming, but you have no moat. What is your only option?
You literally have to build an ark. And think about the physical reality of building an ark. You have to build it before the flood actually arrives. It takes a monumental amount of effort and resources and time.
So in business terms, building an ark means staggering capital expenditure, what we call CapEx.
Huge CapEx. We are talking about acquiring land, pouring concrete for sprawling data centers, laying just miles and miles of fiber optic cable, and pouring billions into R&D.
And you are doing all of this just hoping that the wooden boat you assemble is strong enough to survive the water when it finally hits.
Right. And you aren't building in a vacuum either. Your competitors are right next door building their own arcs. So it becomes this frantic race. It is a massive, incredibly expensive construction site. The crucial takeaway here is that an ark is fundamentally not a moat.
It's just a survival vehicle.
Exactly. Just a vehicle to try and not drown.
Contrast that with the mountain, the free surfer.
Right. So the company that stands inside a moat does not build. They do not race. They don't spend billions of dollars in a panic trying to capture a wave. Because they are standing on a mountain, they are already elevated. When the flood rises, the water simply surrounds the base. The mountain doesn't have to move. It just stays high and dry.
They just sit there and let the landscape do all the work.
They capture the wave with zero effort and zero capex. Mm. Their moat does the heavy lifting. And that moat, you know, it might be strict regulatory capture, meaning laws literally force customers to use their product. Or it might be deep network effects, where the platform becomes exponentially more valuable with each new user, making it basically impossible for a startup to replicate.
Right.
Whatever the structure is, it protects them naturally.
But wait, let's look at the real world for a second. If I have $1 billion war chest, isn't building a colossal ark a sign of absolute strength? Mm-hmm. I mean, if a company like Google or Meta can afford to just outbuild and outspend every single competitor on Earth,
mm-hmm.
doesn't that massive construction site eventually become their mountain?
What's fascinating here is that the structural vulnerability of an ark never truly goes away. No matter how big your ark is, it is perpetually vulnerable to someone figuring out how to build a faster, cheaper, or more efficient ark.
Ah, so you can't ever stop building.
No, you have to constantly maintain it. You have to constantly upgrade the engines. A mountain, on the other hand, relies on systemic structures. So if a government regulation mandates that your specific safety software must be installed on every single commercial flight, you don't have to outspend anyone. The free surfer doesn't spend a dime to survive the flood because the terrain itself shields them.
The terrain shields them. That completely shifts how you view these tech arms races.
Having established the structural difference between these exhausting arcs and these peaceful mountains, let's look at the human toll. What does operating these two wildly different models do to the leaders running them and the investors backing them?
Well, it creates two entirely different vocabularies for how business is done. When you are building an arc, you are a racer. And the race has really strict rules. You have to build faster than the flood, out-engineer the competition, and somehow operate efficiently enough that the sheer cost of the raw materials doesn't bankrupt you.
The framework actually calls this the vocabulary of the mechanical. It revolves entirely around execution, daily efficiency, and competitive positioning.
And total unrelenting exhaustion.
Exactly. The human cost is staggering.
The analysis provides a comparison that just leaps off the page for me. It contrasts Tim Cook with Warren Buffett over the exact same 15-year period.
Oh, this is such a good part.
It really frames Tim Cook as the ultimate racer. For 15 years, he has made thousands upon thousands of decisions at Apple. He has navigated supply chain bottlenecks in Asia, fought antitrust lawsuits over the App Store, constantly driven the engineering teams to build the next iPhone, maintain the old software, and produce entirely new product categories.
It is a relentless, nonstop grind.
And he recently announced he's stepping down at age 65.
Right. And then you look at Warren Buffett, who is framed as the ultimate pacer. Buffett held Apple stock for that exact same 15-year period. Think about how many operational decisions he had to make regarding Apple's supply chain or product lineup.
Literally none. He just made the one decision to buy the stock.
One decision. He didn't have to build the Ark. He just bought a ticket to ride in it. Because he operates as a pacer, leaning on the structural advantages of the companies he owns rather than running the race himself, he is still actively engaged in his work at 95 years old.
There is a quote from Buffett in the text that is perfectly blunt. Regarding his investment strategy, he says, "We did not do a damn thing. That's the way we like it."
That captures the essence of the free surfer mentality so well. The racer sprints, but the pacer walks. One is desperately hammering planks onto the hull of a boat in a storm, and the other is casually hiking up a well-paved trail on the mountain.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Think about how wildly countercultural this is to everything you and I are told. We are taught to worship the hustle, the grind, you know, the sleepless nights of the founder coding in a garage.
Oh, absolutely. The 80-hour work week.
Right. We glorify the sheer willpower of the mechanical racer.
Right.
But this framework is essentially saying that the absolute pinnacle of business is doing nothing while the water gently lifts your boat.
It is anti-hustle culture in the most mathematically sound way possible. And to illustrate this, the document lists what it considers the ultimate mountain companies. These are the free surfers that effortlessly capture huge macro waves without building any arcs.
Take Visa, for example. The global wave is the digitization of payments, right? The massive shift away from cash. But Visa doesn't have to build thousands of new data centers or invent new consumer gadgets to capture that wave.
Not at all. Their moat is the banking network they already built decades ago and the incredibly complex trust and security regulations surrounding it. So the digital payment wave arrives and they just capture a tiny fraction of every transaction automatically.
You just collect the toll. Another one they mention is MSCI. The overarching wave there is the trillions of dollars moving into passive investing in ESG, which stands for Environmental, Social, and Governance Mandates. But MSCI doesn't build an ark.
They don't have to. Their moat consists of the indices and data sets that literally define the benchmarks. If an institutional pension fund has a mandate to only invest in specific ESG-compliant ways, they are practically required to pay MSCI for the data to prove they are compliant.
Wow, they have no choice.
No choice. That is a regulatory mountain.
And the third one mentioned is S&P Global. They capture the ongoing wave of global debt issuance. How do they do it? Through regulatory requirements for ratings. If a corporation wants to issue public debt, institutional investors demand an S&P rating. None of these companies are out there racing. They aren't spending billions hoping for some uncertain future return. The flood rises and their revenues just rise with it.
Right, they own the toll road. They let everyone else spend the money manufacturing the cars.
So this all makes perfect sense in theory. But to prove this isn't just an abstract philosophical exercise, the analysis applies this exact arc versus mountain framework to a real-world event happening right now in 2026, the Microsoft case study.
Oh, this is where the rubber really meets the road.
Yeah, in early 2026, the famous investor Bill Ackman made Microsoft a core holding in his portfolio. He bought into the company after a 26% decline in its stock price. He paid roughly 21 times forward earnings, and he publicly called it a highly compelling valuation.
And let's clarify that for a second. Paying 21 times forward earnings simply means that for every $1 in profit Microsoft is expected to make next year, Ackman is willing to pay $21 today to own a piece of it.
Right. Which, historically, for a tech giant with Microsoft's dominance, getting it at that multiple looks like an absolute steal. I mean, they have their deeply embedded enterprise software business. They have a massive stake in OpenAI on the surface. It seems brilliant.
But the framework asks us to apply the test, the two questions. Is there a wave, and is it captured by a moat? To do that accurately, you can't view Microsoft as a single entity. You really have to break it down into three distinct companies operating under one roof.
Let's walk through them, because this really clarifies the model. Mm-hmm. Company number one inside Microsoft, M365. This is the Office Productivity Suite. Word, Excel, Teams, PowerPoint.
That is the mountain. It is deeply embedded in nearly every enterprise on Earth. The switching costs are just enormous.
Yeah, think about the friction of migrating a Fortune 500 company's entire database, retraining 50,000 employees on a totally new interface, and risking operational downtime. Nobody wants to do it.
Exactly. That business is strictly inside the franchise. The moat captures the wave of workplace digitization, and growth there creates very real protected cash flow.
But then we look at company number two, Azure, their cloud infrastructure business.
Right. And Azure operates on a level playing field. They are competing directly head-to-head with the other hyperscalers, mainly Amazon's AWS and Google Cloud.
And a hyperscaler, just for context, is simply a cloud provider operating at such an unprecedented global scale that they provide the computing backbone for the internet.
Right. But because there are three of them, every inch of market share is brutally contested. If Azure lowers data storage prices, AWS matches it. Growth in Azure generates revenue, sure, but the profit margins are constantly under threat from price wars.
Which brings us to company number three, AI and Copilot. This is the wave everyone is talking about. They have the OpenAI partnership, which certainly gives them a temporary technological edge.
But it is an arc. It is the ultimate chaotic construction site. They are fighting a high-stakes race against Google's Gemini, Amazon's Bedrock, Anthropic, and Meta's open-source models. The moat is completely uncertain here.
Totally. Nobody knows who will have the best model 12 months from now. It's a race, not a toll road.
And to truly grasp that it's an arc, you have to look at the capital expenditure numbers. Microsoft, in 2026 alone, is spending $190 billion in CapEx.
$190 billion.
Is the largest capital investment program in the entire history of the company.
And we have to understand why AI costs so much more than traditional software. You aren't just paying developers to write code.
No, you have to buy hundreds of thousands of specialized GPU chips from NVIDIA, which costs tens of thousands of dollars each. You have to secure real estate for sprawling new data centers. You have to tap into local power grids because these chips consume just an astronomical amount of electricity.
Yeah, and you have to build advanced liquid cooling systems just to keep the servers from literally melting.
They are physically building the arc plank by plank, and they aren't the only ones. Amazon is building an arc. Google is building an arc.
The hyperscalers collectively are spending over $300 billion a year on infrastructure. So when Bill Ackman buys Microsoft, he is fundamentally betting that Satya Nadella will win this unprecedented construction race.
And Nadella is a brilliant CEO. He very well might win it. The odds might even be favorable. But the core lesson of the framework remains. Winning an exhausting $190 billion race against the best engineers on the planet is fundamentally different from quietly owning a toll booth on a mountain.
So what does this all mean? If you're listening to this, how on earth do you value a company that is simultaneously a beautiful, peaceful, effortless mountain like M365, A&E, a chaotic, cash-burning arc construction site like their AI division?
Well, this paradox is exactly why Bruce Greenwald says, true, pure franchises are incredibly rare. When you evaluate a complex company, you have to weigh whether the incredible profits generated by the mountain are simply being incinerated to fund the construction of the arc.
Right.
As an investor or strategist, your goal is to locate the situations where you don't have to trade the pacer for the racer.
You want the mountain without the loud, expensive construction site attached to the side of it.
Precisely. You want to find the rare free surfer. A company with a structural permanent wave and a regulatory or network-based moat, where the wave is captured automatically, without billions in CapEx and without running a race against your rivals.
It is a profound shift in perspective. To summarize the core lesson we've unpacked today, growth only actually matters when it is captured inside a moat. Everything else is just expensive noise. The arc is a race, but the mountain is a toll.
Exactly.
So for you listening, whether you're evaluating a stock, looking at a competitor in your own industry, or even deciding what kind of company you want to give your time and energy to, the next time someone pitches you on this undeniable wave they're chasing, I want you to look right past the wave. Ask to see the moat. If they're just holding a hammer and a blueprint for an arc, you might want to look for higher ground.
And if we pull this back to the macro level, it leaves us with one final, very provocative thought to consider.
Oh, lay it on me.
We've established that the ultimate goal is to find a mountain and avoid the exhaustion of building an arc. But we also know that mountains rely on static things, right? Regulations, legacy networks, deeply embedded human habits. This raises a really important question. What happens when a wave is so violent and so structurally disruptive that it doesn't just surround the mountain, it actually erodes the stone itself?
Oh, wow. You're talking about the moat drying up.
If AI truly is a complete paradigm shift in how computers and humans interact, could Microsoft's seemingly unshakable M365 mountain, the world's reliance on traditional Word documents and Excel grids, be washed away entirely if they don't build that $190 billion arc?
Wow. Is the arc a choice, or is it a desperate survival mechanism for a crumbling mountain? That is going to stick with me. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep your eyes peeled for those massive shifts out there. But more importantly, keep looking for the rare free surfers in your own life. And remember, before you start frantically paddling to catch a wave, check to see if you could just be standing on a mountain instead.